Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and you tune in today because you're sick of trying every fad diet under the sun and training yourself into the ground without seeing any results. That's why I'm here, to share the most effective ways to eat and train for sustainable and real results. What's up, guys? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. As always, I've got an absolute cracker of a show for you today. We've got a very inspiring and motivating guest by the name of Michael Forbes. I'm going to let him tell you guys a bit about his story. But we are, you know, more than 2 weeks into 2019, and I know a lot of you have set some goals and New Year's resolutions on January 1st, or maybe even before then, hopefully, if you've listened to this podcast. But I hope you're still going strong. If you're starting to struggle, you know, then maybe start look at writing down those daily goals. If you're not already, make sure you reverse engineered your end results so you know where you want to be, but it's extremely important to have those steps put in place, a step-by-step plan of how you're actually going to get there, because, you know, a goal without a plan, as I've mentioned before, it's just a dream. It's just a hope. It's just a wish, and it's not going to happen. So you need to figure out how to implement the steps that are actually going to get you there to achieve those goals and really crush it this year. And I hope you guys have been enjoying this podcast. We've got so much good content to come this year, and today is no exception at all. I absolutely love recording this episode. It's one I've wanted to share with you for a while, and one that I've actually wanted to do for a while. You know, Mike has also done a podcast episode on the Health Bloke podcast, which you can go back and have and listen to as well. But for now, just sit back, really enjoy today's episode. If you do enjoy it, if you get something out of it, if you get some inspiration or motivation, take a screenshot of the episode and post it up on your Instagram story for me. Tag me. I'd love to hear your feedback. I really enjoyed it, and I know you guys are going to as well. So without further ado, let's get stuck into the episode. Righto, Forbesy, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you on. I've been wanting to record this one for a while, so it's good to finally get it done.
Brilliant.
You just finished your workout. How was it?
I have indeed, yeah. Not too bad today. No PBs today, but...
No PBs?
Yeah, good solid session. Got through it fairly quickly, so it's good.
Fantastic. So in the intro, I've kept it pretty open about who you are. So what I want to do for the start of the show is actually get you to kind of give the listeners a bit of a rundown of who you are and a bit about yourself, and then we can have a bit of a chat.
Yeah, no worries. So 46 years old, been a quadriplegic for almost 11 years now.
Yep.
So I had my accident when I was 35. At the time, I was doing well in the workplace and doing well in my chosen sport as well. I was competing in the professional ranks of triathlon over all distances, and not so much to win, but to make sure that I was challenging myself. I was finding I was winning age group races, and there wasn't a lot of point in that. So I stepped up to the professional ranks just to really challenge
myself. Challenge yourself, yep.
And it was a challenge, obviously, juggling that with a bit of family life and also work. But I enjoyed it. I loved it. So.
And what were you doing for work at the time?
High up at executive level in IT. So.
Okay.
Yeah, working pretty hard, solid hours, fair bit of interstate work as well at the time, and pretty busy.
It would have been pretty hard to juggle with triathlon training as well, surely.
Yeah, I worked out to do, by the time you're 35, you've got a fair bit of cardio in the bank.
Yeah.
So I was actually doing a lot of gym training, just
using
things like fitballs and free weights and just really working on core strength, and then running and swimming, which you can do when you travel. But obviously taking your bike with you wherever you go isn't
easy. Not ideal, is it? Yeah.
But yeah, running and swimming is always available, and a lot of work just doing core workouts in the gym.
And what initially got you into doing triathlons in the first place? Were you always kind of an athlete growing up as...
Yeah, so I grew up in the country as a swimmer.
Okay.
And I started umpiring.
Whereabouts in the country?
Wagga Wagga, New South Wales.
Yeah, right.
So nice and hot.
Yeah.
Well, and cold in the winter. Yeah. So a bit of both. It's the worst weather in the world, I reckon. Was in the swimming club there, which was fantastic. Absolutely loved it. And I started umpiring Australian rules football.
Okay.
And so with that came running.
Yep.
And living in the country, you ride everywhere to get around. Yeah. So
I used to do that.
Yep. So at the age of 18, there was, when was this? 1988. So this is very much in the early days of triathlon with the Iron War and whatever that went on it in Hawaii. It was really just starting to take a foothold, and it was really, really popular in those years as a startup in Australia just because of our lifestyle. So I went and did one and was first out of the water and got flogged on the bike.
Yeah.
But then ran home pretty strongly and finished fifth overall in my first one at 18. So I thought, maybe I'm all right at this.
Yeah, right.
So I juggled triathlon in the summer and umpiring Australian football in the winter, which was a great mix of always having something to look forward to. And I really just trained for triathlon, and that kept me fit enough for umpiring football.
And so was the swimming and the running your stronger points, and the bike something you had to work on?
They were for years, until I moved to Melbourne. Okay. My cycling was terrible.
Okay.
Because I swam all the time and I ran all the time. And I really just rode to get around and didn't know how to train on the bike. It was only when I moved to Melbourne and joined some groups and found some guys who were pretty good to latch on to. That I became a good cyclist as well. So.
Yeah, cool. And so how many years had you been competing professionally before the accident?
15, about 15.
Oh, right.
Probably six in the professional ranks.
Yeah, right.
And prior to that in the... So up to the age of about 28, 29, I was really just poking around on the edge of it all.
Yep. Started taking it a bit more seriously after that.
Well, I don't know that I ever took it seriously, because to me it was all about challenging myself.
Yeah.
I wasn't competing against anyone but self ever.
Yeah.
I guess that's why I stepped up to compete against guys who were better than me, because I figured that always... push me a bit further.
Do you reckon that carried across, or might have been the other way around, into the work life as well? By the sounds of it, you're, like you said, pretty high up. So were you pretty motivated with that, basically anything you did?
No, quite the opposite, to be honest. To me, working was always a means to an end.
Yeah.
I didn't love it, but in the end, the job that I had when I had my accident, I was loving. It was a fantastic job. Just loved the people involved in what I was doing, and it was a challenging role, and I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed sort of taking my happiness to work, because I exercised in the morning. And
it's a great way to start the day.
Arrived at work with my hair on fire and annoyed all those coffee drinkers.
Yeah.
Took till 10 o'clock to get started.
Yeah. Now, mate, if you're happy to talk about it, do you want to tell us a bit about the accident and what actually happened, and then I guess probably the weeks following it or the days following it?
Yeah, sure. So the day of the accident, I'd been working in Sydney that week, and I flew home, and my wife went out in the morning to do some exercise. We had a three-year-old child at the time, so it was still a bit of juggling to make sure that we both got exercise. So she went out first and I went out second. So I went and hit the road riding at about 10 o'clock.
Okay, yeah.
And the accident happened just before midday on my way home. I was struck on my right side by a passing truck. Just knocked my hands off the handlebars, really, and out of control, and I ran into the back of a park four-wheel drive. So I broke my neck. Don't remember much of the next two or three weeks, to be honest. I was heavily drugged in ICU and all the rest, and then moved into the spinal ward, 6 weeks there, and then you're another 7 months in the rehabilitation hospital over in Kew. So that's what it is, and I obviously, it was a bit of a reset. That's kind of how I looked at it, was I've got a new baseline to work from. Before I was fit and I was working from that baseline, I just had a new one to work from. So it was a matter of working with what your body gave you back and getting it better and stronger. And it started with, to be honest, a little wiggle in the right big toe.
How?
That was probably about week six.
So from the moment where you kind of got to the point where you weren't having as many, I guess they weren't feeding with you as many drugs, and you kind of were, did become aware of the situation you're in. What was your mindset like initially? And if it was bad, which I'm assuming there definitely would have been times where it was, how did, what changed it?
Yeah, I kind of switched off that, those emotions that are extreme,
yeah,
you know, love and hate.
Okay.
Sort of switch those off and focus on just getting better every day. That's yeah, kind of how, that's how I looked at it, was every day was a day to just get a bit better than yesterday. And yeah, I mean, it took me probably 4 or 5 weeks before I was even able to sit up in bed.
Okay.
And then another 2 before I was able to drive an electric wheelchair.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's really slow going. Yeah. It took me 6 weeks before I was able to breathe on my own.
And right.
So yeah, same thing. It's just exercises coming in, getting your diaphragm going, reminding yep, your body how to do it and seeing if those muscles will wake up to give you that function.
Yeah.
And that was the approach that I took, and took me probably 4 or 5 months before I was able to stand up on my own. And then it was a trip to the US where I had intensive rehab post leaving the rehabilitation hospital that really kicked things along. And I came back from there 3 months after being over there, able to walk on crutches.
And, unreal.
And that just gave me the mindset I needed to look after myself.
Yeah.
Keep the body moving, basically. Yeah. It's a very different mentality when you come to the gym. You're not coming here to smash yourself. You've just got to steadily
to make small loosen things forward
up and, yeah, and do what you can to move and add exercises as your body gives you function back.
And initially what did the doctors tell you initially?
Well, that is doom and gloom. They give you the message that, you know, realistically you won't walk again, you won't do this, you won't do that. But I don't know. I didn't ever look at walking to start with.
Yeah.
It was a matter of wiggling the toe and then wiggling the next toe and
yeah,
moving my ankle and then seeing if my left leg would jump in and tag along as well.
Mm.
I just took that approach, and then eventually it becomes realistic that you can walk.
Yeah.
Rather than say, I'm going to walk, because you just don't know what your body's going to give you back. Yeah. I went through rehab with guys with as much, you know, desire and an effort into their rehab that I put in, but for whatever reason, their body didn't give them that function back.
Okay, yeah.
So it gave, my body gave it to me back. It was a matter of using it as best I could.
And how were the, what was the attitude of the people around you like? Like, was there certain people that you really took motivation or inspiration from each day to keep moving forward on the days where it didn't feel as good?
Yeah, it's family, really.
Yeah.
You know, my wife was a trooper through that period, just boundless amounts of energy and getting into it. And then a 3-year-old that you want to obviously get up and about and be yeah, involved in her life. So
yeah,
not so much now. She's a teenager, but
yeah,
she doesn't want to borrow me now. Yeah. But I think that's all teenagers. But yeah, at the time, that was obviously the motivation. It was a pretty easy motivation. I didn't need outside
yeah,
inspiration to do what I was doing.
So fast forward 11 years from when it happened, what are your kind of physical capabilities at the moment, and where are you at with your rehab and training?
Well, most importantly, I'm able to look after myself from the time. So I need someone to help me get up in the morning and someone yep, to help me to go to bed at night. But I'm able to look after myself from 9 to 5. That's probably the biggest achievement. I'm able to drive a car and I'm able to hold down a part-time job, which is obviously, you know, good for the brain, good for just being involved in the outside world, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, physically I'm able to ride a 3-wheel bike, which I get out on probably 3 times a week.
Unreal.
And most importantly, I'm able to do something which is feels really good, which is ski. So.
Which is ski. Yeah, unreal. Yeah,
so I ride a sit ski and do that with the family. We have a ball. So
fantastic.
That's, you know, as long as you've got a few things there that are good for the body and the mind,
yeah.
and then all the other crap that goes with this condition seems bearable.
Seems bearable, yeah. And so where do you... I know you've mentioned a few times now where it is kind of more just like a take each step as it comes type of thing, but where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years' time? Like what...
Hopefully still ticking over,
yeah.
really.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got sort of fun goals around... You got to pick goals with things that are fun.
Mm.
And the skiing is fun.
Yep.
But what's come with sort of being motivated to get better skiing is better arm function, better core function. You probably see me in the gym doing a lot of movements on twisting.
Yeah.
And if you think about how simple movements in the gym, like you hop on a leg press, everything's up and down.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of your movements are up and down. But the trick with this condition is to encourage all those muscles to move in different directions.
Directions, yeah.
Because that's what gives you balance in the end.
Yeah, for sure.
So that all of the exercises that I'm doing are for my fun exercise, which is skiing.
Mm-hmm.
But the wash off of that is you know, I walked 31 steps with my physio, totally untouched.
Really?
And that's all from having a totally different goal.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'd had the goal to walk, I think it would have been pretty frustrating.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, as much as walking seems great, to me it's a bit of a party trick.
Party trick.
There's a lot of, you know, it's great for me to get around and easy for me to transfer from place to place. But at the end of the day, there's other aspects of this condition which drag you down.
Yeah.
And make walking seem like a bit whoopee, to be honest.
Okay.
So people look from the outside and go, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it is, but
yeah.
There's other aspects to this condition which sort of make it seem a bit whoopee.
And when you're at home, do you walk around with crutches?
Yeah. So I'm able to... I've got an assistance dog, which helps me out because my arms are a bit rubbish. And it means I'm able to move around the house and go from chair to chair and throw my crutches on the ground.
Yep.
And when I need them, I can get my dog to pass them up to me.
Crazy.
So I can
grab
them and walk again.
Yeah,
so,
awesome.
Yeah, but, you know, transferring from just one wheelchair to another, from one seat to another, from a wheelchair into a normal car seat to drive, all those things are really useful.
Yeah, right. And so how long have you had the... How long have you been able to drive again?
I've been driving now for, I reckon, it must be 5 years.
Awesome.
Might be six, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that would have been a good feeling.
Yeah, it is. It's a different feeling. So I steer with a joystick.
Okay.
And I've got a normal foot brake and then a hand accelerator.
Okay.
So it's a different sort of brain pattern
that
you're dealing with. But I've got used to it and I just drive sensibly. I'm not...
Not at home?
I've got a long wheelbase diesel van.
Yeah.
And I just cruise.
Cruise around. So, yeah, it's good.
And it's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
So it's there are limitations to steering with a joystick that you
can imagine,
always have in the back of your mind.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yeah, there's no handbrake turns.
No handbrake turns? Haven't seen you slide into MSAC recently, actually.
No, it's just toddling.
Yeah, toddling. Now, with the nutrition side of things, was that important? Was there an importance placed on what you're eating, or you know, what type of macronutrients, whether it be protein, carbohydrates, fats, in the recovery process, and even now?
Yeah, it was interesting because I was initially fed by nasal gastric tube,
okay,
because I didn't have the muscles to swallow. And while that was the case, I went from 70 kilos down to 53.
Right.
So it's quite a bit of weight loss.
Yeah, it is.
So I was a bit skeletal. Once I started eating, the things that I craved mostly were proteins and to build things back up again.
Yeah.
And I ate a lot of fish. Just for whatever reason, I was craving stuff like salmon. And, you know, so I'd mix salmon with pasta and whatever and eat a lot of that stuff.
Cool.
I think... The number one thing, because the hardest thing with quadriplegia is just putting on weight, because there's no real way to burn.
Yeah, to burn correct. Weight. Yeah. Have you ever? I don't know.
I just haven't put on weight. I've made sure that I've kept my weight pretty good.
Yeah.
And I hover at about 60 to 62 kilos now.
Okay. Have you ever worn like a, whether it be a Fitbit or whatever, to see how much energy you expend in one of your sessions in here?
It's interesting because one of the quadriplegia affects what's called your autonomic nervous system.
Yeah.
So that's the ability of muscles and organs in your body to react to what you're doing, to do the right thing.
Right.
So my heart rate doesn't go up very much. It hovers at between 60 and 75.
Even after a hard, you know...
Doesn't move.
Hard set.
So...
That's interesting.
And so I battle low blood pressure. So, yeah, so that's what happens. If you exercise too hard, you just get really faint.
Right.
So... The other That's thing really is your body doesn't sweat, so you can't.
Okay.
You can't sort of.
So you can overheat. I guess you probably get to overheat.
Overheat really quick.
Right.
So today, day like 33 degrees.
You've got a higher risk of overheating.
That's right. So I went to hop on the treadmill to walk today, but it was right next to the window.
Okay.
33 degrees outside, just hopped straight off.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's what I mean. There's other.
Yeah.
Aspects to it that need to be managed.
Yeah.
But, you know, the rowing machine was under the fan, so...
Yeah, good result.
Gave that a good crack.
Yeah. Are you still involved in any of the triathlon stuff now? Do you still enjoy watching it, or do you get down and watch any races?
I've got to be honest, I couldn't care less about, about it. Not for any real reason, but not overly interested in what... It's not a great spectator sport, put it that way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, true. Unless you're just waiting at the finish line, I guess.
I mean, I love the feeling of doing it, though, when you took off on the run after riding, you know, pretty hard.
When your legs are cooked.
And you take off running and you're running good pace, you know, my body should be able to do it.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was the ultimate feeling of triathlon.
Yeah.
My body shouldn't be able to do this, but it
is. Do what you're doing, yeah.
Yeah.
What sports do you enjoy watching now? Or is there, what are your kind of hobbies outside of training and work and rehab stuff?
Yeah, so look, I do watch a bit of live sport. So I love the cricket, footy in winter, and the NBA basketball. I watch any game that an Aussie's playing.
Oh yeah,
so yeah. I'm pretty fired up to see how we go in the next Olympics in the basketball.
So am I can't wait.
So the way the team looks, we've got every position nicely covered. So
looks very good, doesn't it? Hopefully, we can keep everyone healthy and.
That's right.
See how we go.
And I think they've got the right sort of people in there to get those who may not otherwise be keen, quite keen.
So exactly right. If we can build a bit of chemistry, then.
I think Delhi and Joe Ingles would be pretty keen to fire up.
Yeah, it'd be good if we can get Simmons and Exum and all those guys in.
Absolutely. And the big Thon Maker and there's a few. It should be good.
It's exciting, isn't it?
So, yeah, I watch a bit of that to fall asleep at night, to be honest. There's always a game.
Yeah, there's plenty of games on, isn't there?
Always a game during the day that an Aussie's playing.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And I know you're a Swan supporter, so Lloydie, if you're listening, Lloydie was in here not long ago and came and said g'day, but how long have you been following the Swans?
My following of the Swans is interesting because I started umpired in Wagga and I went up to do university in Sydney, so I was umpiring in Sydney, and this is in the 90s when the Swans were just rubbish. And I remember being emergency umpire one game. I think Swans were playing Fitzroy.
Okay, cool.
And the official crowd popped up at 3,000.
Right.
And I reckon there's no way there were 3,000 people there.
Yeah, right.
So I ended up doing some work with the Swans as I'd go out with a player and run the development programs at schools and stuff
while I was
at
uni. Oh, cool.
And then from that, they found out that I was a pretty good runner and they really couldn't afford a trainer to take the midfielders running.
Right.
So I ended up jumping in with them and taking the midfielders and not coaching them, but learning the run sessions.
That's awesome.
So, so when I moved to Melbourne, obviously I knew all the guys.
Yeah.
And just followed them and it kind of went from there.
That's great.
So that's my connection to the Swans, and being a New South Welshman, I've got to jump on board and stick up for them a bit.
How do you reckon they'll go this year?
I don't mind, really. I don't mind. You know, you follow a team.
Yeah.
What will be, will be.
Exactly right.
I enjoy the fact that the academy's in there and they're supporting New South Wales players playing for, you know, a club in their state, because I think it'll give them a bit of longevity.
Awesome. And is there any specific goals for 2019?
I want to ski independently. So at the moment I ski with guides behind me holding ropes or tethers.
Yeah.
Just to make sure I don't kill anyone, really.
Is that just to control the speed?
Yeah, and to help me stop or out of trouble if I'm losing a bit of control. Yeah. But my aim is to let go of those ropes, even if it's just on super runs.
So where do you usually ski?
Ski at Mount Buller in Australia and Banff in Canada.
Awesome.
Over two.
I want to go there.
Locations.
Just had a friend who's gone there. Looks awesome.
Jump on board. We're going in April.
Yeah. I reckon I'll need a few lessons. I'll be no good, I reckon. I might need someone to hold me so I don't really kill anyone as well. Well, Forbesy, thanks for coming on the show today, mate. I reckon people are going to really enjoy the episode, so I really appreciate you coming on.
No problems.
Guys, if you've enjoyed the episode, which I know you will have, make sure you take a screenshot of the show today and post it up on your Instagram story and tag me. I'd love to get your feedback on the show, and I'll be sure to pass it on to Forbesy. Awesome, mate. Thank you.
All right,
enjoy the rest of your day, guys.